Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Talk about San Francisco's economy and the hotels and the tourist industry being destroyed by liberalism here. I want to give you a microcosm. Two high-end San Francisco hotels defaulted on large loans last month. One was the 97-year-old Stanford Court on Nob Hill, defaulted on an $89 million loan. 3 weeks later, at the end of July, the Four Seasons Hotel, built on Market Street in 01, withheld payment on $90 million it owned. Okay, so that's two hotels in San Francisco defaulting on large loans last month. Now you say, well, why? You could say high unemployment. You could say job insecurity. You could say that that's part of it, and I would agree with you. But that's not the whole reason. People are still traveling somewhere, and they're traveling to places, and they're traveling to cities. But why are they increasingly not coming to San Francisco is the question. I think you can trace it directly to the mayor, Gavin Newsom, and his team of communist buddies called supervisors who are anti-business, anti-tourism, anti-family, anti-man for that matter. I've never seen anything like this. Sure, the hotels themselves may have some responsibility, but I'd like to ask you, the listeners, if you agree with some who are saying that they're not coming here because of the changing makeup of the city. Because of the liberalism of the city, because of the rudeness of the people in the city, because of the fact that you can hardly find signs in English, that you can hardly find anyone in a hotel to talk to you in English, that the climate, in essence, the multicultural climate that is so welcoming to illegal aliens, particularly illegal alien drug dealers, is so unwelcoming to tourists. So I'd like to talk about the positive end of this. If you could reach any Tusum Newsom, the gadfly mayor, if you can reach any of the anti-family, anti-American supervisors who have stolen the city's pride, what would you say to them in order for you to come back to this city? And or what is your last experience in visiting San Francisco been? The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Or if you care to talk about the CIA, go ahead. Go ahead. See if I care. I'll take calls on that as well. Let us see. I'll read you some emails from my Facebook account. Nah, I don't want to bother. They're very good. I can't read anything anymore. I get tongue-tied if I read anybody else's work, even a letter, an email, an article. I can't do it. You know, this is an extemporaneous medium. Let me tell you something about talk radio. It's an extemporaneous medium, and I realize what's been happening to me lately. Because I am so enmeshed in struggling to get my name off the list in England, where I don't belong. After all, they released the Lockerbie bomber, a known murderer who killed 260 people. A known murderer. They released him for compassionate reasons. And the very same illegitimate liberal government of the United Kingdom. And to make no mistake about it, I don't care what Gordon Brown said. They even admitted that they consulted with Eric Holder, okay, when they released the Lockerbie bomber. Believe me, they talked to each other. They won't take my name off the list. So what I'm saying is because I have been reading these articles about my dilemma, and because I have been trying to convince you to buy Banned in Britain, I'm getting a little tongue-tied and a little exhausted, and I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm not going to read anything anymore. No articles, no emails, no newspapers. It's strictly an extemporaneous medium, and that's what I'm going to use from now on. So that's where we're going to go from here for now. Maybe it will change in the future, but that's it. So we've got a hotel industry that's ailing. We've got a tourist industry that's ailing. They're blaming it on the economy, which is partly true. I'm blaming it on the troubled fact that we have the most far-left radical government in the history of San Francisco driving tourists away and driving people out of the city with their hostile attitudes. San Francisco, Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. You know, I can't speak, you know, about the traveling in particular, but, you know, I'm a San Francisco resident, And, you know, I walked out of my house the other day to notice that all the parking meters have now been changed to 9 o'clock in the morning to 7 o'clock in the morning. There's no notices put out of this. You know, you go.
Well, that's – well, don't you understand? Any Tewsome Newsom needs to raise hundreds of millions of dollars more to give to the illegal aliens and the bums. So the best way to do it is to make workers like you get up earlier and put it in his pocket so he can give it to the bums and the illegal aliens.
And then, you know, and then you speak with the meter people. Well, they say, you know, if you have a problem with the park in the parking garages. But then the city doesn't also tell you that it owns 75% of the parking garages. So, you know, they say.
Did you know that most downtown hotels charge about $40 a night for parking? Did you know that?
Most definitely. I'm in the hospitality industry. And, you know, I have a business here in the city. And outside of my business, from the hours of 7 to 9 in the morning and from 3 to 7, I can't even park. So I'm.
I hear you, but Scott, let me ask you something. How many car windows are broken open every morning by the wonderful residents of San Francisco who are given so many services by the mayor and the supervisors, the wonderful people of the streets who go around breaking windows and stealing car radios and things inside cars? Everywhere I walk, I see shattered glass.
I pay $6,000 a month for my apartment, and I had my car stolen twice in front of my $6,000 apartment building. So
that's terrible.
It doesn't matter what neighborhood, like you just said.
I want somebody, I hear you, Scott, and I want somebody from San Francisco to call this show and tell me, someone in the hotel business, I want you to lay out for the people how many different taxes have been put onto hotels by the anti-business, far-left liberal regime of Gavin Newsom. How many taxes are there on a hotel room in San Francisco? Okay? Chicago, Tim, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, went on to your beautiful city of San Francisco for my honeymoon several years ago. Would hesitate to go back. I thought the homeless were just terribly aggressive over there. Berated you if you told them.
That's right. They insult your wife. They insult you. The cops do nothing because they've been told that these are the sacred cows of the city with more rights than the taxpayer. And who did it? The supervisors, the communist supervisors of the city. Thank you for the call. I'm going to let it all hang out right now. You know, the people who are calling this show from around America have money and they travel. Have money, will travel. And many of them love this city, but they won't come back until there's a change of regime in this city, until the Al-Qaeda members inside City Hall are driven out. They're the Al-Qaeda against business. They hate capitalism and they hate business. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? But there's more to it than that. And let me explain it to you. There's no art in this city. Now you say, why, that can't be. They pride themselves in their arts and entertainment. Can you name anything in this city that is worthy of an international recognition? Name one arts performance in this city that's on the level of an international arts performance, and you won't find it. It is a very provincial city, very much as it has always been, very charming. It's why I moved here. The weather is the best in the country. The fog rolling in over the hills is astonishing. But the radical left-wing Al-Qaeda members who have taken over City Hall have long hated business, have long hated tourists, have long hated real progress, and have taken the side of the bums and the illegal alien drug dealers. And that is why tourism is dying. Sure, the economy has something to do with it, but not everything to do with it. Other than looking at the fog and getting drunk in a restaurant, there's little to do here. It is an unchild-friendly city. There is nothing for children to do here. Nothing whatsoever. It's a city that hates children. And that's another reason people are not coming here. In fact, the supervisors, most of whom are not married, hate families. They sneer at you. They call you breeders. That's why you're not coming here. New York, WOR. Dan, you've been here. What did you see here in the city?
Dr. Savage, you just struck a nerve when I could tell you I'm a former detective with the NYPD. My fiance and I went down to the pier. You know those guys who dress in the silver garb and they pretend they're robots? It's insane to watch. The atmosphere, and I knew I was in trouble when I went.
Yeah, the guy with the silver garb, I understand, is a supervisor as a part-time job. He makes more money as a mime than he does as a supervisor.
It's amazing. And when I went to the MoMA and I saw the urinal laying on its back, I knew I was in deep trouble.
Wait, where'd you see the urinal?
There was a urinal on display at the MoMA in San Francisco.
Oh, well, sure. That would be an icon in this city, a urinal. After all, it's used for many different things other than bodily functions, of course.
And the nice Midwest ladies there were asking, did somebody make this? Why is this on display? We don't understand.
Yeah, well, see what I say? There's no culture here to speak of. It's a joke. It's something out of a deranged mind. You go into once great museums, and you find almost nothing to look at except traditional collections of art that have been there for a long time, which I love. But the tourists don't go to the traditional collections. They go into some major rooms and they see the shoes of a yenta who died and left money to the museum. They call that, or a urinal in this case. They put that in the museum. I understand that there's no art here, so you're coming here for something other than the art. What do people come here for? The weather, the beauty, the fog, et cetera. And that's all beautiful. But that's not enough to sustain a tourist industry.
Savage.
I left my heart in San Francisco.
Well, in his case, he left his mind in San Francisco as well, by his politics. But that's not unusual for San Francisco's ruling elite. I think they all left their minds in a clothing bag somewhere in 1965. Only they don't remember the hotel in which they were staying. We're talking about two major hotels in San Francisco. I'm talking high and notable, defaulting on large loans last month, and the tourism industry being, let's say, on the downturn. Now, certainly the national economy has something to do with it, but not the only thing to do with the downturn in the hotel and tourism trade in this city. There are many other factors, and they're all related to Annie Toussaint Newsom, the incompetent, bumbling left-wing mayor, and the even more incompetent, radical, far-left, anti-family, anti-American board of supervisors. There's not a businessman amongst them. And so I'm asking you, the national audience, the international audience, the Savage Nation, to tell me what you would like to tell these bums would bring you back to this city. I'll be the ombudsman for the city of San Francisco. I'll be the ombudsman for my many friends in the restaurant industry to try and get the city back on track. And I want to hear you. I want you to call the show and give the world a view of what you saw when you came here, okay? A parking meter, for 10 cents, you get 2 minutes in a parking meter. 2 minutes in a meter, 10 cents, and then they pounce on you to give you a ticket if you go in shopping somewhere. You hear this? You hear what they're doing to business here? Now you wonder why people don't come into the city. You know the phone number here on the Savage Nation. And then on the other side of the coin, if you do come here, why do you come here? What do you love about this city? We know it has no art. There are individually fine symphonic musicians, but the symphony sounds like a junior high school orchestra warming up, owing to the fact that they had to put certain types of individuals into the symphonic capacity who would normally be teaching in, let us say, San Quentin music studio. But for reasons of affirmative action, they pulled the curtain back and they had to make the symphony look like America. The same goes for theater. There is no theater in San Francisco. It is all high school or sub-high school in par. And that is why there's no arts. Tell me what you come here for otherwise. I'd like to hear it. I know I stay here for a couple of reasons, and I told you what they are. The environment itself is overwhelming. That has not yet been destroyed by the liberals. Eventually, if they could, they probably would see if they could charge you for the fog by the amount that you inhale. But what do you come here for? I'd like to know. Why do you come here? It's anti-family. It's anti-children. It's anti-tourist. Why do you come here? I'd like to know. Modesto, Ozzy, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Doug Savage. Listen, I have three sons. I'm a single father, and I haven't taken my sons back to San Francisco for the last 10 years because downtown is a sewer-stinking-smell city.
Well, maybe they ought to spend a little money on street sweepers. You know, there was a period in the 1970s when I first moved here when they had street sweepers with rolling carts and brooms, and they actually went around and cleaned the city. And then there was a scandal that they were making $38,000 a year even then. Where are the street sweepers? I never see a truck going by with water on it. I guess they're trying to save the water because it's so environmentally precious. Thank you for the call. I don't know where it is. I know we could have had the Iowa berth here in the city, but Dianne Feinstein voted to make sure it never berthed here. One of the great ships of the Iowa-class battleships of World War II. Many people begged to have it birthed in the city, but the anti-military fanatics of the city said, don't come here. This was once a great Navy town. The Navy is not welcome. This was once a great Army town. The Army is not welcome. So who is welcome here? Sacramento, Roxanne, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, I was born and raised in San Francisco, and that was my city. And I explored like you wouldn't believe as a child. And my father, who is 90 years old, did the same thing in San Francisco. And I would like it if I call me old-fashioned, but I would think it would be a nice thing if they could clean the excrement off the streets in Union Square.
Oh, my God. You mean the bums are defecating in the streets?
Yeah, they are. And it's
pretty
bad. Oh,
God. Oh, my God. Well, I know there's at least 30% of the city that would like a business person, man or woman, of any race, to take over this city from this incompetent left-wing boob who cannot run anything, let alone a city. Now you go to the supervisors, they make him look like a genius. They're anti-military, they're anti-tourism, they're anti-hotel, they're anti-family, and they expect tourists to keep taking it? And that's what's happening here. They're blaming it on the national economy. That's absurd. New York City, John, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. I've been listening to you for about a year now, and this is something I've always wanted to ask you. How do you live in a city like San Francisco when you are such a true conservative? How do you deal with that around you?
Well, about 30% of the people out here are very conservative. Okay, moving on. San Antonio, Sam, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, I got a great reason to go to San Francisco. It's sailboat racing on the bay.
Bingo. Thank you for bringing it up. I'm a boater, and I know that there's nothing more beautiful. There are actually some of the finest boating in the world is here.
It's the most phenomenal place I think I've ever been.
Well, I'm not a sailor. I am a power boater, but still in all, I love the bay's boating. The air is unlike any other. Look, I have a place in Florida that I go to. I find it too hot to boat down there. You need air conditioning to boat in Florida, by and large. Here, you don't need air conditioning. You know, you need to wear a... Even on a summer day, if I go out on my boat and I go out through the Golden Gate, most of the time I need to wear a sweatshirt. I need to cover my complete, you know, my body and head and all of that. It's gorgeous. Gorgeous.
If you're not dealing with the current, then you're dealing with the wind or the fog or commercial... It's the most dynamic place I've ever been.
It's a great place for sailors. I totally agree with you. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I could have told you what Obama would do because I've lived in the most radical left-wing city in America. In fact, it's far to the left of France or Germany even. And I've seen one incompetent boob after another take office. I've seen one incompetent supervisor. These are anti-business people who have never run a business. These are anti-tourist people who sneer at you when you come to the city. They tax hotel rooms thinking there's no limit to how many taxes they can put on you, and they kill the goose that lays the golden egg. Now they're worried that the tourist base is dying, the income is dying, and they're trying to say, well, it's due to the national economy. Certainly that is part of the problem. Anyone who denies that would be a fool. But anyone who says that the reason the hotel business is down and the tourist business is down in San Francisco only because of the national recession would be a fool as well. The fact of the matter is there are tourist horror stories that I'm going to open up here on the Savage Nation. If you have a tourist or tourism horror story, I'd like you to call my show, so that perhaps these dumbbells who run the city will come to understand that they've killed the golden goose. And maybe the people, the morons of this city, who think that they're oh so tolerant and they want nothing but tolerant individuals running things, will come to understand that they need hard-nosed business people to save this city. Okay, let's go down to the callers. Let's start in San Francisco itself. Marilyn on KNEW, go ahead, please.
Oh, well, hi. I guess you must know that I'm one of the 30% that's on board with you. I'm with you. I see boondoggle after boondoggle. My poor mother and I are both on disability, and so is my husband, and it's getting more and more exceedingly expensive for all of us mere mortals to live in the city, but we're out in the outer sunset. And just recently, my mother had to spend hard-to-come-by food money so we could build a fence around our garbage because the garbage Gestapo felt, oh, we need to make the city more beautiful for the tourists who come out there.
What do you mean? The garbage Gestapo looks in your cans? Well, oh, no. You mean they made you cover your garbage out in the outer sunset, but tourists don't go there.
I know. Well, we're 3 blocks from the zoo, but still, we had to spend $100-something to build the fence.
Oh, I see what you're saying. The useless employees of the environmental area came out and said your garbage is exposed, cover it with a fence.
Right, exactly. Otherwise, we could get...
And now, how much do you think that employee cost the city? How much a year in benefits and salary and pension funds did that incompetent, moronic college graduate cost the taxpayers?
Exactly.
All right? Yeah. Okay, thank you. Look, I go out to the areas outside the heartland of the city. See, I'm very fortunate in that I have a couple of different places I stay, and one of which is in the city of San Francisco, and I've been there for years and years and years. I've always had a place in the city. I've also always had a place outside of the city. And I move back and forth at will and at whim, so no one knows where I'm going to be when, because I don't know where I'm going to be when. But the point I'm making is I'm very familiar with the streets, probably more so than the politicians, certainly more so than the supervisors, because I actually walk the streets of the city. They are dirtier than they have ever been. I'd like to know where the street cleaners are. I'd like to know where the street sweepers are. I'd like to know why there is so much garbage in the streets. You know, I love Fisherman's Wharf. I told you that. I want to know why the city does not take one of its prime tourist attractions and put it on the top of the list to clean. Why don't they send street sweepers down there? Why don't they force the homeless, give them a broom and a garbage can, and tell them the next time you want to check, come here with a can full of garbage, and we'll give you a portion of your check. Every time you bring us a can full of garbage, one of these bright college graduates who Mayor Newsom hired will give you $10. Otherwise, we're not going to give you any more welfare so you could snort it up your nose. How about paying them per can of garbage? Would that make sense to you? No, it doesn't make sense? You mean you owe them the money? You owe them the money, huh? Tyler, Texas. Tommy, you've been here. What did you see when you were in San Francisco?
Dr. Savage, I've got one bad thing and two good things about San Francisco. I visited my first and only time about 3.5 years ago. Bad thing is walking out of a restaurant with a doggy bag, take about 5 steps, and there's a 19-year-old kid begging me for my food. I told him to get a job, and I thought that he was going to fight me. And I was actually scared for a little bit.
Well, you should be, because I learned a long time ago that if you ever got into an altercation with one of the street vermin, even if they spit at you, you would be arrested for assault. They're looking for that. Don't go near them. Don't react. Let me tell you something about street smarts with vermin across America. If they look at you, look away. If they insult your wife, go the other way. Do not engage them. They are the equivalent of the person who is looking for you to tail end your car, because there are legions of unemployed lawyers in the city looking to make a living strictly by having a tourist stand up for their dignity. And that's one of the reasons tourists are staying away, is because the bums are very hostile. The bums are out of control. The bums are dangerous. The bums are using the city like a toilet bowl, in my opinion. But there are many other reasons people are staying away, and I'd like to hear from you. If you have a tourist horror story, so that we can inform the mayor and the supervisors what they might do to bring you back. Chicago, John, you're on the Savage Nation.
Mike, you stole my thunder. Great to be on your show. But you're absolutely right. I was born and raised in Chicago, joined the Navy, got stationed on Treasure Island back in 1987. And, mm-hmm. and you know, ever since, that's just gone downhill. From Silicon Valley to them kicking them all out. Look at Hunter's Point. They went through all that rejuvenation up there, and what happened? Squat, because they told them all to get out. And then during the Base Realignment Act, they took everybody out of there. And then
the reason they made the military clean up the old naval base at Hunter's Point was so that Nancy Pelosi and her friends could swoop in like vultures and build their own properties on it after the government invested billions of dollars in cleaning it up. Don't you see a scam when you confront it? What do you think this was all about? What do you think they're going to do, put the military back when they can make billions of dollars, her and Feinstein? Thanks for the call. That's one man's opinion. One man's opinion. Take a look at the Presidio, one of the great military bases in America. Take a look at what Feinstein and Boxer have done to it through nepotism. Take a look at the fact that George Lucas was given a valuable piece of land to build a film studio for nothing down. Ask yourself how these things happen. San Francisco, Lewis, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi. You know, ever since September 11, 2001, there has not been equestrian horse sporting or equestrian activities in Golden Gate Park. The first time in 165 years that we've not had our used to horseback activities in the city, and it's all due to these liberal thugs that have invaded our city positions. It's just absolutely nuts. They've done nothing to save Golden Gate Park as a historical horseback riding park. They've done nothing.
Well, the Golden Gate Park is safe for the junkies. That's the important thing, and for other individuals who use the bushes for various and sundry. It's very important that you understand what the city prides itself on. Certainly it isn't horseback riding. It is making certain that the bushes are useful for people who stick themselves in the arm, the intravenous drug users, not junkies. You're not allowed to say the word junkie in San Francisco. They're called intravenous drug users. You understand that?
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And the kids go into playgrounds and there are needles sticking out of the ground. There were cases of them sliding down sliding ponds and kids getting stuck with hypodermic needles. Utah, Robert, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I lived in San Francisco in the 60s and 70s, and I love the city. But now, with Newsom Company running the city, I'm worried about it. After a father and two sons were brutally murdered there, my daughter wants to go to Berkeley University next year, and I'm not happy about it. I'm nervous about it.
There's a very high crime rate at the University of California at Berkeley and Berkeley itself. It has also been taken over by radical liberals who care nothing about the traditions of the university, care only about stuffing their pockets and their cronies. I would send this somewhere else. And remember, I am a graduate of the University of California at Berkeley with a doctorate, a real PhD, not an honorary one, in a real scientific field. And so it's not easy for me to say this. I would be very concerned about sending my daughter to the University of California at Berkeley. I truly would. But there are other things we can talk about with regard to San Francisco. Any tourist horror stories, 1-800-449, or any reasons you have come here or continue to come here. I'm open for business on the Savage Nation. Sacramento John, go ahead, please.
The only thing John. I would take my family there for, Michael, would be to the ball game, which I would get on a ferry at Jack London Square and over there, so I wouldn't have to interact with any of the vermin and run around that city. Or,
The stadium is gorgeous. I was down there last year. I'm not a big ball fan, but I went, and I really did enjoy it. It's something to behold. It's gorgeous on the bay.
Ferry. It's beautiful right over. You don't have to, like I say, go inside the city. It drops you off right there at the park. And the zoo. That would be it.
That's right. I love the zoo as well. I still do. Fortunately, there are fences to keep out the mayor and the supervisors, so the zoo is a very safe place because there are only wild animals inside, as opposed to politicians. And therefore, you're safe from the bums who are, of course, released on the city by the politicians to frighten the middle class. That's how I see it. You don't like it? Too bad. Jay in San Francisco, KNEW, go ahead, please.
Hi. Thank you, Dr. Savage. Yeah, I grew up in San Francisco, Dr. Savage. And I'll say, I think that there are tons of things to do in this city. I mean, you have Golden Gate Park, the D. Young Museum. They just opened up the Exploratorium. Your last caller mentioned the ballpark here. There's a wharf area. There's some beautiful neighborhoods, Pacific Heights. There's some great institutions here, USF, St. Ignatius Church. I mean,
you're mentioning some very, very interesting places, but what does USF have to do with tourists?
Well, what I'm saying, Dr. Savage, is if you come to the city, there are tons of tourist attractions here. Granted, some of the areas in the Market Street and downtown area, you know, you have some issues there. But what urban environment don't you have that, Dr. Savage?
Well, that's why I opened up both sides, and I'm glad you were able to call and give us the positive, but still not a big magnet for children, is it, Jay?
Well, I disagree because, once again, I mentioned Golden. You have a bunch of activities that the locals know about. There are many locals.
All right, well, let me ask you, do you happen to have children yourself?
I'm about to be married, and I will be having children in the next
year. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but, Jay, it's a very difficult city to bring a child to. Virtually wherever you go, children are sneered at by the locals. They don't like children because it's not a children-friendly city. It's an anti-children city. That's one of the main reasons tourists are staying away in droves. They don't like going in restaurants and being sneered at. They don't like going everywhere and children being put at the back of the bus, so to speak.
Well, I haven't experienced that. I haven't seen that in the city. I haven't seen parents who are sneered.
Don't get me wrong, Jay. I could have left here a long time ago, but I haven't, have I? I love the city. I'm one of the 30% who are here and despise the politicians and love the city. I'm one of the 30% who would like to see some representation. Unfortunately, I don't even have a representative in this city. I don't have a congressperson. I certainly don't have a senator. I don't have a supervisor anywhere in the Bay Area that represents family values. Do you know of one?
Well, then perhaps that leaves the door open for you, Dr. Savage. If you truly represent family values and you fear there are others in the Bay Area who are...
No. I have no desire to run for office, let alone on a local level. If I ever did run for office, it would be on a national level. I could knock one of the senators out of her seat as sure as I'm sitting here. If I wanted to be a senator, I could easily beat Feinstein or Boxer. You want to put that down? You can mark it down in bronze. But I don't want to run for politics. The last thing I would ever want to do is run for a local seat. Boxer and Feinstein are both vulnerable because they're corrupt, they're old, and they're old news. And they don't represent families, nor do they represent businesses.
Savage.
Charming small town, don't get me wrong. I mean, one of the reasons I moved here was because of its small town atmosphere. But I had no idea that the small-mindedness of the small town would permeate the illusory city by the bay. This is the Savage Nation, and we are talking about things positive and things negative of San Francisco. I mean, I continue to live here for obvious reasons. I'm amongst the 30% who would like to see a pro-business individual run for the mayor's office. I would like to see the supervisors thrown out. Here you have a city where supervisors pass laws to protect and shield illegal immigrant drug dealers who are underage. Here you have city supervisors who pass laws every day attacking tourists in the tourist base, putting one tax after another on a hotel room. Here you have supervisors spend their every day figuring out how they can destroy businesses because they've never run one. And they wonder all of a sudden where the taxes are going. There are many historical examples of what is going on in the city. This is not the first place this has happened. In fact, I think it was Ibsen, I could be mistaken, who wrote about such a situation in the 19th century in one of the famous European tourist cities. I wish I could recall it, but right now I cannot. Next hour, we'll talk about national news, the unemployment, the deficit, government motors, government health, climate change. They gave up on global warming because they know it was hogwash. Now it's climate change. They're God themselves. Now they're going to change the climate. You know we're living in global cooling, of course. The coldest summer on record, but don't tell that to Obama and the other liars who want to gain control of the economy on another level. Then after they're through with that, they want to jam 330 million illegal aliens down your throat. And on and on and on. Progress, progress, progress. Well, it ain't happening. And that's why we're talking about local topics right now, because I believe that the local topic of San Francisco's failing tourist base and why you're staying away, why you're still coming here, may help awaken not so much the incompetent politicians. I've given up on them a long time ago. It may help awaken the electorate who was defeated in this city. The average person does not vote in San Francisco. They've turned the whole city over to extremists who have put their friends into office for so long. And it all went along, got along. There was enough money robbed from the tourists, from the hotel tax, one tax after another, from the residents, one tax after another, that everyone paid. What the heck, what did they gave up on it? But if we could get the electorate excited about a pro-business candidate, maybe we could save the city from the radical extremists who have taken it over. And that's why I say if you have a tourist horror story, or on the other side of it, a reason you still come here, because remember, many people still come here. I still live here. I'd like to hear from you on the Savage Nation. San Diego, David, San Francisco's the topic. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Savage, an honor to finally speak with you. I just wanted to express one thing, or a couple of things, but really quick. I'm an African-American. I grew up in South Central Los Angeles in the 80s, so I've seen gang violence, and I'm a conservative. I'm very conservative in my views, thanks to you, by the way.
You better not tell anybody that, David. It makes me even more hated by the liberal politicians.
Let me tell you, that indeed is what I'm calling about. When I went to San Francisco, I went to a place called Ann's Restaurant, or in Beverly Hills called Crustacean, with my wife. We're celebrating our one-year anniversary of our marriage. She's giving me a Movado watch she bought for me, whatever the gift was, and I'm looking over, and she's giving it to me. The waitress was of the sweet type, and you had four other guys who were, of course, of that agenda up there. They made a mockery of the fact that it was our one-year anniversary of marriage. Now, mind you, they're blowing kisses and being very, very just overly, you know, aggressive with the situation. And, you know, this,
Wait, you were mocked in a restaurant at an anniversary?
On my wedding anniversary at Ann's restaurant, where you're going to come out about $200, $300 if you're going to eat a decent meal. And, you know,
that's sad. Very sad. Very sad. I thought it was a tolerant city that respected all lifestyles.
No, they don't. They don't respect all lifestyles. And you know, liberalism is really sad when you can see that. Me as an African-American, I grew up in South Central Los Angeles. I do fairly well for me and my wife. We do quite well. And I'm a black American. And when you express a conservative view, you're looked at as like, whoa, you must have lost all your ethnic or historical background. And it's sad that liberals do that. And I was one
of the that's because you're no longer a useful tool of the Marxist agenda.
And you're right about that. And I just like to say,
yeah, but well, you don't have too many friends, I can guarantee you. I can tell you you're probably a man alone.
Well, I have some friends, and I express my views. And I can tell you one last thing, Mr. Savage. One thing about this presidency, and I've learned this from you when you told me that McCain was throwing the election, and it opened my eyes. The presidency is not a man position. I think that the people who are in power will not allow that to be won by a popularity contest. That is an institution in which they use to fool the American people and the public, and this country is going to do what it's going to do regardless.
Well, right. How much further do you have to go than they take this incompetent moron Bernanke and give him another term? What has this moron actually done of any value? Has this moron saved the economy? Why would Obama have given him another appointment? Because he's a front man. He's a stooge. And do you know that for the first time in history, a union boss has been made the head of a Federal Reserve in New York City? He took the head of the AFL-CIO in New York and put him onto the New York Federal Reserve. What does that tell you? The problem is we did not have as many illegal immigrants. We did not have a compliant press. We did not have as many foreign interests controlling our currency as we do now. And therefore, the prognosis is worse than it was then for recovery. But hold on, David. I'm going to give you a free copy of Banned in Britain when it's published because I like your call.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is yours truly, Michael Savage. The mastermind of the Pan Am bombing over Lockerbie, Scotland, was released to a hero's welcome in Libya. Same left-wing radical Labour government under Gordon Brown decided to release the man who killed hundreds to his home in Libya, where he arrived to a hero's welcome. The very same government that released the Lockerbie bomber for compassionate reasons has denied Michael Savage his freedom of movement and his freedom of speech. Now, I want to pause right here. You've heard it all before. You haven't heard it all before. In a world of hype, and in a world of hype artists, it's very difficult for the average listener to know what's true, what's false, what's real, what they should be concerned about. I recognize that. But what if there really is such a case of an innocent man being targeted by an illegitimate government strictly to placate the radical Muslims in that nation out of fear that the radical Muslims will know that they've been picked on for good reasons, because you've got people there marching around screaming death to Britain, death to the USA, overthrow Britain, blah, 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 we will kill you, we will do this. You've seen the signs, you've heard it. So the British government is afraid of them, as they should be. But in order to balance this list of excluded individuals, they choose a white man, a conservative from America who has a radio show, in order to balance the list. Now, you would say, well, they have a right to do it. No, my friends, they don't have the right to do it. Don't jump to the conclusion that a nation has the right to exclude somebody simply on the basis of speech. And if this government was so concerned with their fine nation being a place that is an honor to come to, an honor to live in, as I'm sure it is for so many millions of Brits, why would they free the Lockerbie bomber to go home to a hero's welcome in Libya? When I saw the new legal findings, which I'm going to talk about today on the Savage Nation, and we just posted a new letter that was released to Jackie Smith with demands in it, and recommendations and demands. It's on michaelsavage.com. Now, you could say, what do I care about that? I care about Obamacare. I do, too. I care about Obamacare, too. I understand what it is. It's socialized medicine. I understand that it's been discovered that Mr. Axelrod, who is the chief of staff for Obama, and certain family members of his, allegedly are going to make millions of dollars from the health care push. Allegedly, now. You understand that we can't say that definitively, but even the Associated Press says that Obama's push for national health care overhaul is providing a financial windfall to Democratic consulting firms closely connected to the president and two top advisors, including David Axelrod. Now, of course, if this was Bush and it was Karl Rove, Rove would be history. But I'm not going to talk about that directly. I'm going to talk about this indirectly, because the very same corruption that exists in this far-left government of Obama exists in the far-left government of Gordon Brown in England. And the very same corruption is being covered up here in the same way that it's being covered up there. And how do they cover their corruption here in America? They attack anybody who attacks Obama as being a racist. Anybody who criticizes Obama is a far-right, right-wing extremist. In England, what do? What do these British public school snobs do? And I say public school because in England, it's the reverse of here. If you're rich, you go to a public school, not a private school. British public school snots, who apparently have never worked a day in their life, have been found out in my legal research. And I am going to talk about the insanity of my having to fight to have my name taken off a list of murderers and terrorists, while a true murderer and terrorist, the Islamic fascist who was responsible for masterminding the Lockerbie bombing and the deaths of over 200 people, was released by the British government, and he went home to Libya to a hero's welcome. Have you seen the footage of him getting on and off the plane in Scotland? Do you see them shaking his hand, the British governmental officials who hate me? The very same Labour governmental officials who hate Michael Savage shook the hands of a real murderer, and he went home to a hero's welcome. The British government under Gordon Brown is suicidal. They have sympathy for those who kill their own people and antipathy for those that would defend them. In researching the emails going back and forth between these snotty public school brats in England, you're not going to believe what we found. I've told you some of it, but you haven't heard all of it. I want you to go to michaelsavage.com at your leisure and look at the new legal letter to Britain. I will summarize some of those points today as I go in and out of the news. The memos are not going to be believed. You're not going to believe them when you read them. You have to see them. And I have to go back again to what I said to you before, that in a world of hype, a world of self-promoters, in a world of people trying to make a name for themselves, it's very difficult for you to take me seriously if you are a born skeptic as I am. I'm a born skeptic. I don't believe anybody, particularly anybody in the media. So it would be natural for you to have some skepticism about what I am saying, but I want you to try to not put aside your skepticism, but try to listen to what I'm saying to you. Just try for a minute. How do you square a government, the British Labour government, releasing the mastermind of the Lockerbie bombing, shaking his hand as he leaves Scotland, and putting me on a list of people to be banned because of my unacceptable behavior? Now, I want you to understand that to the British government under Gordon Brown, speech has become behavior. Do you understand how Orwellian this is? Speech has become behavior. And my speech, although it has never called for violence, may be offensive, may be shocking, may be very offensive and very shocking, as I'm sure it is to many people. It is shocking and offensive to people. I'm aware of that. Do you know that what I found in those emails should make your hair stand up? Do you know that they took statements from the founding of my Paul Revere Society, such as a nation is defined by its borders, language, and culture, and they used that as evidence of why I should be banned from Britain? I'm not making this up. I swear to you. I swear to you. They said that because Michael Savage believes a nation is defined by its borders, its language, and its culture, he has engaged in hateful speech. He has engaged in unacceptable behavior. Because he believes in borders, language, and culture, he has provoked and incited violence. Do you have any idea what this means? It means that the liberals have become the most extreme form of thought police. It means that the liberals have declared conservatives criminal. It means that the liberals in England have criminalized conservative thought and conservative speech, which is why every liberal who really believes in the liberal credo should buy my book, Banned in Britain. You need it as a document. You need to see the proof. You need to see I'm not hyping you. And you need to share it with your liberal friends. It may finally awaken you from your slumber before it is too late. It just might save America from the fate that Britain is suffering under these public school snots. I am one man fighting an entire government. Don't you understand what's at stake? I hope you do. And I hope you understand this is not hype, nor do I care about selling a certain number of books because it will fatten my wallet. I hope you understand that I'm well past that point in my life. And I hope you understand that there's a greater principle in these shows about being banned in Britain and this one man's fight to free his name from this list of murderers and terrorists. I hope you understand.
Savage.
I want to do this with you. I want to take you inside a courtroom. I'm going to act as my own defense attorney. I'm going to ask you, the American people listening to the Savage Nation, conservative, libertarian, liberal, independent, to be the jury.
Hear ye, hear ye. The court of the Savage Nation is now in session. All rise.
I want to read something to you. We discovered the following memo being passed back and forth before they put me on this list of murderers and terrorists. Listen to what one of them said. Savage has a show called The Savage Nation. His views are extreme. He considers immigration, liberalism, and Islam to be the most dangerous threats to the U.S. He broadcasts on approximately 350 stations and receives an estimated weekly audience of 8 million listeners. This is what they wrote to each other. He is the third most popular radio talk show host in America. Now listen very carefully, folks. Members of the jury, here's what they wrote to each other in a summary of why I should be banned from Britain and that my fundamental rights be denied. Quote, Savage is the founder of the Paul Revere Society, which according to its mission statement aims to, quote, to take back our borders, our language, and our traditional culture from the left, corroding our great nation, close quote. This was a hit on me because I am a conservative. Now, the very same government that took offense with me because I believe in borders, language, and culture, I want you to listen to Scottish Justice Secretary Kenny McCaskill, another far leftist, explaining why he released the Lockerbie bomber. Listen to clip two.
Our justice system demands that judgment be imposed, but compassion be available. Our beliefs dictate that justice be served, but mercy be shown. Compassion and mercy are about upholding the beliefs that we seek to live by, remaining true to our values as a people, no matter the severity of the provocation or the atrocity perpetrated.
Rubbish. 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 Where is the compassion and mercy towards Michael Savage? You low-life lout, you. you release an actual murderer who masterminded the blowing up of an airplane and the killing of hundreds of people, saying that you did so out of compassion and mercy, while Michael Savage, because he is a conservative and he is a white male, receives no such compassion and no such mercy. You say that compassion and mercy are the beliefs that you seek to live by, and yet your cohorts in London have no compassion or mercy for a conservative named Michael Savage. That you colluded behind my back to destroy my name and reputation and to deny me free travel and free speech. And you didn't notify me. You didn't give me a chance to explain myself or answer as to whether these statements are actually true. This is your idea of compassion and mercy, Scottish Justice Kenny McCaskill. Listen to clip three now.
For these reasons, and these reasons alone, it is my decision that Mr. Abdel Basset Ali Mohamed Al-Megrahi, convicted in 2001 of the Lockerbie bombing, now terminally ill with prostate cancer, be released on compassionate grounds and are allowed to return to Libya to die.
So in other words, if I had a terminal illness and I was going to die, you'd let me into your rotten, stinking nation? Is that what you would do? If I were terminally ill, you'd release me for compassionate grounds? Well, let me tell you something. I ain't going to die so fast. Let me tell you something, Mr. Justice. I'm not going to get sick so fast. And let me tell you something else. I'm going to fight you until the last breath in my mouth. I'll make sure my name is cleared, and I will name you and shame all of you. Before I am through, I will show the world what you have become. I will show them how you have not only acted to defend your own people and your own honor, how you've acted not only to not defend Britain, to not defend your borders, to not defend the English language, to not defend your culture, but to destroy it from within. Whether it be out of cowardice or treason, I'm not sure if it's a combination of one or the both or something else. You talk about compassion and mercy out of one side of your mouth, while your cohorts in London show no such compassion and mercy to a man whose only crime is that he is an outspoken white male conservative, and that is your idea of compassion and mercy? I want you to go to michaelsavage.com and read the new legal letter that was sent by my attorneys, the defamation claim to Jackie Smith. And then I want you to look at the secret emails. Well, I can't give them to you now, but I want you to see the cover copy, the table of contents, and the excerpt for Banned in Britain. And once you look at these documents and put them together, and then you combine them with the fact that the very same Labour government that did this to me, and remember what they did to me, you say, oh, big deal, you can't go to Britain. You didn't want to go anyway. Well, you have to see the larger point. That denies me my freedom of movement, which is a denial of my fundamental civil rights. It denies me a freedom of movement. Do you understand that? It's a denial of the European Commission on Human Rights laws. It's a denial of the U.S. Bill of Rights. It's a denial of British law itself. It's a denial of everything that is decent about democracies. It is something you would see out of North Korea. Didn't North Korea just arrest two people for entering its soil that they didn't approve of politically? Weren't two journalists just released from North Korea by Bill Clinton because they dared wander into that sacred nation without permission? This is something for you to behold. The very same government of the United States of America under Hillary Clinton and Obama, Barack Obama, that wants to continue the open border policy started by Bill Clinton and magnified and amplified by George Bush, the open borders with Mexico, where drug dealers can walk right across the border, says nothing about a legitimate American broadcaster with millions of followers being unable to go across the borders of Britain. Don't you see what's at stake here? Don't you understand what's at stake here? Ladies and gentlemen of the Savage jury, I rest my case. It's Blue Monday on the Savage Nation. This is Dr. Dissident Michael Savage back in a moment.
Savage.
Samurai of Talk Radio, Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. I think I need a vacation. I'd like to go to a campground for about 3 weeks. Play some jazz for me. I'm running out of steam here. I'm thinking of buying a campground because I don't want to go to one where anybody is there, actually. Look, I'm a loner. What can I tell you? If I have to listen to somebody for 1 minute, I go berserk. No, let me talk about that for a minute. Turn off the music. I went on the internet today because it's August already. I had enough of the politics of another book coming out. I'm burned out. So I started to look in certain areas of Placer County, California, which are has some of the most gorgeous lakes in the world. Gold Lake and things like that. So there's campgrounds up there that are on Forest Service land that are on long-term leases that the owners have. They have like five cabins. You know, some of them are rather primitive. Beautiful log cabins that I dreamed about as a boy. No television, you know what I'm saying? So I said, well, why don't I buy one of those lodges with five cabins, you know what I'm saying? And invite nobody there, just be me and Teddy. Because I actually think at this phase of my life I wouldn't be able to handle it. I don't think I could handle it anymore. Maybe when I was young, yes. But at this stage of my life, I don't think I could be alone in the woods anymore. I don't have a Thoreau thing in me. A lot of people go crazy, by the way, when they go back to nature. They don't tell you about that. Oh, yeah, it's a famous story. In the 60s, there was a couple. I forget who they were. They went back to nature. They were heroes of the liberals in the commie left, the peacenik back-to-earth movement. And they moved to Alaska to get away from it all, right? And they used to write articles. They lived 6 months in Alaska in the outback, and then 6 months they live in the Caribbean when it got cold. So, all right, they have it both ways. All right, it's their business. Eventually, the guy walked into a propeller blade of a plane. He couldn't take it anymore. Just him and his long-toothed wife, you know what I'm saying? And the mosquito. Him and the mosquito and the wife. He walked into the propeller of the plane that came to get him. This is the problem. You can't do the back-to-nature thing anymore. It's too late. Thoreau is dead. Sacramento, Tony, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, greetings from all your fans born in 1981.
Hey, thank you.
Recently, I went on a hike way up in the hills there and found a crystal clear, ice-cold lake, and I went swimming in it. And it was one of the most refreshing things I can remember in the past. I wondered if you were a swimmer and if you...
I am. I'm a very good swimmer. I'm a former lifeguard. I haven't saved anybody's life, but I'm a former lifeguard. Yeah, I'm a very good swimmer to this day. And the question is what, Tony?
Do you take advantage lately of the ice-cold, beautiful mountain?
You know, you're raising a very interesting point. I've read that immersing yourself in ice-cold water, although it's shocking, is one of the most healthful things you can do.
No,
I have an aversion to cold water. I don't really like cold water, Tony. Maybe what I need right now is throw myself in San Francisco Bay. I don't mean off the Golden Gate Bridge. I'm saying pull my boat into a cove. It's 58 degrees, the water, though. That's the thing. It's cold.
No, go up to a lake up on Mount Lassen and take a dive.
Yeah, what's the water temperature in a lake up there?
I don't know, but it was perfect. Probably a little bit warmer than 58 degrees.
Okay. Well, I remember there was an area in Alpine Meadows, California, that's a stunning... There's an area called Five Lakes. You probably don't know that area. In 1980, I was hiking up there a lot with family when the kids were young. I even was able to backpack one of my children on my back all the way to the top of the lake. You get up there in August, there's still snow on the ground, which to me is miraculously beautiful. And the lake, the ice has finally melted out in late August. The water is like ice water, you know what I mean, Tony? And at that time, Mrs. S. swam in that lake. I couldn't even put a toe in it. Some people have a capacity for cold water. I don't have it.
You should try again.
Yeah, you mean maybe it'll snap me out of my malaise?
It might do something for you.
Yeah, it could give me a heart attack altogether. Or either way, it's better off than what I have now. Oh, God, I shouldn't get... Thank you for the... No, you got to be careful. I don't believe in shocking the system. I have my own exercise regimen. It consists in watching 5 to 6 hours of television after. No. I bicycle every day. I really do. I don't mean, you see, this is, I'm going to talk about exercise. Am I at a break point here or what? Where am I? I'm fine. I could talk for 3 minutes. Good. You know, a lot of guys drop dead in their 30s way back when from excessive running. They would run and look at the watches. Bingo. Blowout. So I was a runner when I was in my 30s. I weighed, you know, I was thin, low cholesterol, runner. Till one day I was running up to a waterfall. Every day I'd run to a waterfall. And I heard an inner voice screaming at me, stop running, stop running, stop running, stop running. So I thought I went crazy. So I stopped running. Never ran again the rest of my life. My body was warning me to stop running. And then in that decade, there were a lot of very famous deaths of runners. Jim Fix, for example, was a very famous runner. He wrote for Runner's Magazine, and he dropped dead while running. So you say, well, what does that prove? I'm not saying it proves anything other than the body is not made for continuous stress of this kind, the kind of people put themselves through with exercise. So as time went on, I started to study different methods of what's considered to be exercise. And the Chinese have it right. The ancient Chinese had it exactly right, which is the moderate approach to it. No excessive pushing of the body. At least that's what I interpreted it to mean. I mean, maybe it's my own interpretation. So if I bicycle moderately, not until I'm in a sweat bath and looking at a watch. I'm not doing it to sweat. I'm doing it to get some balance in my body. Balance is one of the most important things you can get in your body. So bicycling is excellent for gaining balance alone, even if you just do it to keep your balance. I've bicycled all my life, by the way. If I miss a day, I don't feel good. A couple of miles to town and back, go to look at people down in the mall, see what's going on, women, children, men, vendors. You know, it's like a touch of life. It's a real town. In a modern American suburb, the mall is actually our town, since there's no towns left to speak of. It's as good a town as any. So anyway, bicycle, look around, push around, get some, you know, yard time, go back to the prison of the computer and radio. But when it comes to pushing your body, I believe that many young men have it wrong, and they really push themselves too hard. They push and they push and they push and they run for a certain amount of time. They look good, don't get me wrong. They're thin, they're lean, they're in good shape. But I'm not so sure that that is so good to sustain for a very long period of time in your life. Moderate, moderate, moderate. And all you got to do is talk to an orthopedic surgeon about it if you think I'm making this up. The joints will go from excessive pounding. The hips, the joints are going to be replaced early on from the running. So there are other less, what do they call it? There's a word, less impact kind of sports that you can practice. But it's the same with weightlifting. You don't have to crunch weights for 5 hours a day. I mean, unless you're a Navy SEAL or something like that, or an Army Ranger or one of those. Of course, you want to be as hard as a rock. But I'm talking about the average person who wants to keep reasonably fit after the age of a certain age. That's all. You don't have to overdo it. That has been my philosophy. And thus far, it's worked for me. That's all. That's all I'm saying. I think that everyone has to come to their own ideas about what's going to work for them. And it comes back to the jumping in a cold lake. Now, maybe that's good shock therapy when you're young and it wakes you up. And certainly invigorating. But I think after a certain age, if you leap into an ice-cold lake, you run the risk of a shock that could be fatal to your system. Things change, the body changes, people change, and you have to change with your age. You have to change with the ages as well. Nothing significant in what I just said at all.
Savage.
+1 800 449 8255. Let's go to the callers. San Francisco, ding, ding. Dan, welcome to the Savage Nation from KNEW. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'll tell you, when you struck a chord when you were talking about the moderate exercise, and you're absolutely right. About a year and a half ago, in January of 2008, I was doing heavy squats, okay, with my trainer.
Right.
And she noticed that my right eyelid was drooping, and I had ptosis and meiosis in my right eye. The right eyelid was drooping. My pupil was small. I called my doctor. He said, look, that's a serious condition. You got to get to the hospital right now.
Right.
And I'll tell you what, I got to the emergency room, and later they gave me an MRI, and I had a carotid dissection. I mean, that, you know, I've all saw the move. When you're really pressing hard on doing heavy squats or any heavy movement, I was 40 at the time. And,
wow.
And I'll tell you what. Yeah, I mean, it blew out the inside of my right carotid artery.
Well, right, because your body can – look, it's common sense that when you strain your body – let's use old, simple terminology, not medical jargon, not big words. When you strain your body, you're putting pressure on internal organs. I mean, in common parlance, right? And some of those internal organs would include the vascular system. And so when you put extra pressure, internal pressure on your arterial system, your venous system, your – in other words, your vascular system, you're liable to break something, right, Dan?
Absolutely, and I did. I tore the inner lining in my right internal carotid artery. Right?
So how did they – immediate surgery saved you?
Well, I didn't need surgery. I needed to go on blood thinners for 9 months. I mean, and that stuff is just awful. I had to give myself a shot every day, and then I had to go on warfarin.
What were you on, Coumarin?
It's called Coumadin.
Yeah, it's Coumadin. I know how it was the – people don't even realize how that was developed. You know that I remember when I was studying pharmacology as a graduate student, I think it was a student in graduate school designed a rat poison that if you put it into the food, the bait, the rat would eat the food, and the poison that he developed was the progenitor, the grandfather of the Coumadin. It caused bleeding. The rat would bleed to death. Did you know that?
It's rat poison. Exactly, I did. And
very few people understand that medicines and poisons are only a matter of dosage. You know that.
That's exactly it. It's an old drug, and you're taking a controlled dose of rat poison.
Well, so today you've given up. The point of your story is a little different, though. It's about weightlifting and how it almost killed you. So obviously you've modified your exercise regimen.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I don't push myself. I do more cardio. I do push-ups, things with my own body weight. I do weights, but, you know, more reps, less weight.
Dan, when you do push-ups, here's another one. When you do push-ups, how many do you do? Do you do till you're gagging?
No. I'll do maybe 25 or 30, sometimes 50, but I don't do it till I'm, you know. Why do
right.
that?
That's exactly what I'm getting at. Think of Tai Chi when you do any exercise. Think of gentle motion. Think of slow motion, easy on your body. The body's not made for it after a certain age. You're not a kid anymore.
Exactly. And even kids.
Well, Dan, you know, you read increasingly of young kids getting heart attacks today playing ball. It happens even to youngsters today because of the garbage food that they're eating. Their arteries are clogged.
Exactly.
Do you know that, Dan, do you know that famous study of autopsies that were done on soldiers in the Korean War, then the Vietnam War, and what they found?
No.
Oh, well, hold on. I'm going to tell it to you on the air. And I think maybe if I'm not – well, I can't with any certainty say it was going back to World War II because I would be making it up. But I know for sure that there was a comparison done between the deceased soldiers, the autopsies, for example, of soldiers who had died in the Korean War and then of soldiers who they autopsied during the Vietnam War. And there was a degeneration of the arterial system, the cardiovascular system, that was dramatic as a result of dietary alterations in the American diet, rather. In other words, if you went back and you did an autopsy of guys who died in World War II, you would have found a much different picture internally that is in their arteries than you would have found, let's say, by 1952. And then you speed it up to 1969, it's a whole different story. Because the junk food diet had already become prevalent in America by the time these boys, God bless their souls, the guys who died in Vietnam who had, you know, they already grew up. You're talking about guys who were born in 1950, et cetera, maybe 1950. So by then they were like, they're already eating junk food in the 50s. Back in the 40s, there was very little junk food. The diet was totally different back in the 1940s. And, of course, you go back and back and back. It's the same thing. You find more whole foods, less fat, less sugar in the diet. Right now, we have a sugar epidemic in America. And you say, well, what does that have to do with arterial damage? Well, you read the work of the recently deceased great doctor. He just died, and he was one of my heroes. But I don't think I want to put his name out and have a rush on it. You know, the guys let him. But he wrote about the sugar disease a long time ago. He said a good many of the degenerative diseases of our time are based on too high a quantity of refined sugars in the diet. He wasn't even laying the blame on the doorstep of the fats, by the way, which is a whole other controversial area. We are fat-obsessed in the United States of America to the detriment of the health of many women and children. You see families today raising children on pure vegetarian or vegan diets, and the children are suffering. They're tired. They can't focus. They're not bright. They're getting vitamin deficiency diseases, and the mothers will not give them a hamburger. Oh, no, my child's never eaten red meat. Great. Great, but take a look at your child's health. My child's never had a piece of chicken. Well, I had this experiment when my children were little, and I told you about it. There were many people back in the day who were raising their children vegetarian. I wasn't, because I knew children needed a diet rich in protein, a certain amount of fat, etc. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, I was totally into health at that time. You know, ground up apricots, vegetables. So don't think I was just feeding junk food. But mixed in with every meal was a high degree of good quality protein. You know, if I made hamburgers, I ground onions into them. So the long and short of it is, if friends' kids would come over to dinner, and my kids were eating chicken, and the parent with the vegetarian child would turn her head, that kid would grab the chicken off my kid's plate. The child was starving. Now go to the women today, the young women. The skinny young women with perfect figures, so-called. The ones who look like post-op transvestites, which is the new model, let's say, for the American woman. It used to be a full-hip woman. A woman with a certain voluptuousness was considered the social norm. Today, because of various influences, which I don't have to spell out, a woman tries to look like a man who's had a surgery. These women are near insane, many of them, from a lack of nutrients such as iron. They're suffering iron deficiency. They're suffering deficiency of the B vitamins. They're suffering folic acid deficiencies because they have known nothing about food and diet. Nothing. They're not being taught anything about it. Many of them have anxiety attacks. They put them on pills. And the reason they'll take the pills is because it doesn't add any weight. It's not what they need. They need to go on a balanced diet, which means real food. So anyway, and by the way, you can be a vegetarian, don't get me wrong, if you know how to balance your foods. Please don't misinterpret what I'm saying. I wrote books on this going back 30 years ago, so I understand that. You can. It's very difficult, though. And then you have to supplement your diet with certain B vitamins, which you're not going to get from the vegetables. But people don't do that. They don't know it. But women are a special case. I mean, women are different than men with regard to things that occur in their body on a regular monthly basis. And during that phase of their month, they're losing a certain amount of iron, for example. They are deficient in iron, and it causes an energy loss. Women don't understand this, and they have to understand it. So anyway, look, this is well established in good old health books that were written, I would say, more than 10 years ago. You can't find a lot of this information anymore. And yes, I'm going to pitch you now. Buy Healing Children Naturally. Why? Because it actually has great diets for prospective parents who can't have children. There's a diet for pregnancy. There's diets for the father, even, prior to conception. You say, wow, that's quackery. All right, then go take drugs. See if I care. Okay, moving on. San Francisco, Martin, KNEW, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, I'm Martin, and I'm a chef now, and I was in the Army. I always liked loud noises. I used to shoot with a shotgun when I was 12 years old.
So you like loud noises, but what about when you're a chef?
Well, I'm a chef. My point was, the reason why you want it quiet is you want a certain ambiance to enjoy good food. If it's good, it's good.
I cannot eat around noise. I can't even eat around conversation.
Yeah, but you want it quiet to enjoy. You want a certain level of quiet.
Well, let's talk about this as human beings. When you eat, you put the fork into food. We're not talking about just taking in calories. We're talking about dining, okay, as opposed to eating. You're eating a sandwich, you could eat it on a subway car, right? But when you're actually trying to taste the food, experience the food, savor the food or the wine, don't you need to kind of have a cerebral reaction as well as just a gustatorial reaction?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Actually, I was going to pick another rock and roll song today, but it was every day another one goes through my head. Keep it playing. Let me see. Forget it. I'll turn it off. Lo and behold, my cardiologist sent me my lab results. And I don't have any cardiac trouble, but I go once a year because I got upside down lipids. You say, what, are you crazy talking about your blood lipids on the air? Yes, because I'm going to lead to a medical point that may be of some value to some of you out there who are a little concerned about your cholesterol, for example. And so many Americans are being sold on Lipitor and Lipitor-like drugs who may not need them. And I want to talk about that for a minute because there are other things that you might be able to do that are not drug-related. But the society is drugged to death, whether they're on antidepressants when they don't need them or they're on anti-cholesterol medications when they may not need them. The country is drugged to death. And what's interesting is it ties right into the healthcare debate because you'll notice that the drug companies are all in favor of Obamacare. Now, why would the drug companies be in favor of Obamacare? Because it will give unlimited prescription drugs to everybody in America and they'll make trillions of dollars. You understand how this works? You understand how this all works together? Follow the money. So let's go back to the fact that, oh yeah, drugs are lifesavers. Don't get me wrong. But they should be used as a last resort, not on a recreational basis, as is being done in this country. Many of the American people today are practicing recreational medicine. Everybody in this country thinks something's wrong with them and gets a prescription for it. Now, in some cases, I said, RXs can save your life, but in most cases, they're useless or dangerous, okay? Now, having laid the groundwork for that, I want to go back again to what I'm talking about. For years, I've struggled with upside-down VAP profiles, my LDL high, my HDL low, my overall cholesterol through the ceiling, triglycerides high. Whatever you look at, it's upside down. So if a normal person got this, they would run and say, I'd do anything because I think I'm going to die. But it's been like this for 20 years, but I'm not dead. And thus far, I haven't had a heart attack, so it doesn't make sense. Unless you get an even more refined test, which I got. Now, remember, I come from a family of early death by coronary heart disease. I don't want to give you the ages and turn it into a joke. But I've been running scared about a heart attack since I'm 30, maybe 20, which is what drove me into the jungles of the South Seas, collecting plants, drove me to get a PhD in epidemiology and nutrition, drove me to research and write books on health before I went into radio. I'll never forget, when I entered radio in 1994, I said, this is probably going to kill me younger than I normally would go, but it'll be worth it. And, you know, every day is a miracle to me, but I'm still here 15 years later, and the stress level's as high as it could be. You have to say, well, how the hell does a guy live like this with this kind of stress? People have said to me, I blow off steam on the air, so therefore I'm alive. All right, that's one way to look at it. It's probably folklorically true. But let me go back to blood chemistry per se. You all know about cholesterol. And you're supposed to keep it low. Well, that's not 100% valid because there are societies where there's very high total cholesterol in the blood and the people don't get heart attacks. And so then the people started looking at LDL and HDL, the good and bad cholesterol that you know about. So let's look at the bad cholesterol, LDL, low-density lipoproteins. Why is it so-called the bad cholesterol, LDL, low-density lipoproteins? Because they're small particles that are thought to penetrate arterial walls and begin to cause plaque formation. Now, why would nature have designed the production of LDL to begin with? Why would a human being produce low-density lipoprotein? In other words, there was a reason that nature had bodies produce this substance. Certainly, there are dietary factors, But there's a natural phenomenon that goes on as well. And that is, as a person gets older, their arteries become damaged. In other words, the vascular wall becomes weak, and microfissures or cracks begin to develop in the endothelial vascular wall. And what the body does in an attempt to patch up these fissures in the wall is the body produces cholesterol, right? And it produces a relative cholesterol called LPA, lipoprotein A. Now, the problem is both cholesterol and LPA are very sticky, and it makes them perfect for the job. It's like a glue, right? And you've been taught, get rid of that glue because you don't want that glue to clog up your arteries, and it makes sense to do that. But you have to understand something. The body may overproduce cholesterol and overproduce LPA in its patching, and the patching ability will then aggregate and form a plaque that leads to vascular occlusion or hardening of the arteries, okay? So here's the thing. You may have high cholesterol, but you may also have LPA, which is high, and LPA is sticky, cholesterol is sticky, and so they adhere to the arterial wall, and you want to watch out because you'll clog your arteries. But what if you have high cholesterol and low LPA, lipoprotein A? It's a major independent risk factor for cardiovascular disease. Follow me for a minute. Follow what I'm saying to you. When you have your blood cholesterol tested, you all get LDL, HDL, VLDL, you get triglycerides. Most of you know about these values. But have you been tested for LPA, cholesterol, lipoprotein A? Remember what I said to you. Lipoprotein A is manufactured in the liver, and it carries cholesterol into the arteries, which may have cracks in them. But if you have too high an LPA, it carries the LDL, the low-density lipoproteins, right through the arterial wall and causes the plaque that you don't want. But what can you do if you have high LPA? The answer is very, very little. There are no drugs or medicines to effectively lower your LPA. So what do you do if you have a low LPA? You thank God for your genetics. My cholesterol levels are completely screwed up. Very high LDL, very low HDL. Very high total cholesterol. But you're not going to believe what I'm going to tell you. My latest lab report came back 2 hours ago, and I have a 0.0 LPA cholesterol, which is almost statistically or medically impossible. In fact, my cardiologist is calling a lab to make sure that there's been no mistake. The ideal here is to have a very low LPA, minus zero. It's the only reason I'm still living. In other words, this is a genetically inherited component. You can't modify it very easily. The only things you can do to lower your LPA, which is what you want to do, is take saturated levels of vitamin C, lysine, and proline, because they are building blocks of collagen. But I don't want to get into great details about that. Just understand that you should circulate great amounts of vitamin C in your blood, as well as 800 IUs of vitamin E. Don't listen to what any quack tells you. Vitamin C is very important for your health in many, many different ways. Forget what the quacks tell you that it doesn't work or it's dangerous. They're liars. They want to push you into the drug field. I'll be right back. Talking about lifestyles, and one of the lifestyles in America that all of us are just one mistake away from is the prison. We have the largest prison population proportionate to the overall population in the world, including China. In essence, we're a police state. And if you think that you're not a potential candidate for prison, you're mistaken. We live in a situation where any government agent can make anything up about you and put you away. Right now, there's a guilty man in prison named Bernie Madoff. As you know, he's the $50 billion man. And he was convicted and took his punishment rather quickly and without giving anyone up for obvious reasons. It was to protect, many people are saying, to protect his wife and sons and grandchildren from any further prosecution so that they can make off with the gains that he particularly got. That's what people are saying. Now, he is now claiming that he has cancer. He's now claiming he's dying of cancer. And he's now claiming he's taking 20 pills a day. A gentleman who is a Wall Street prison consultant named Larry Levine was on MSNBC, and he was talking. He's the man who coached Martha Stewart on how to handle herself in prison. Very interesting interview. Listen to it.
Inmates say he's talking or taking, excuse me, about 20 pills a day for his cancer, and that he does not have much longer, in fact, to live. Rumors have made us suffering from pancreatic cancer are not new. However, the Federal Bureau of Prisons issued a statement saying Bernie Madoff is not dying of cancer. Bernie Madoff is not terminally ill and has not been diagnosed with cancer. The same jailhouse sources to the New York Post say that the Ponzi schemer has stripped off his shirt for Native American sweat lodge ceremonies. Done with other prisoners.
You can't make this stuff up.
Another prisoner told the tabloid that Madoff has been making friends with the gay prisoners. Is pretending you have cancer, if in fact that's what's going on here, an advisable tactic when you come into prison and are trying to protect yourself from whatever may scare you?
He might be looking for some sympathy, I don't know, from the staff, from the other inmates. But as far as him taking all these pills, it could be for heart medication, blood pressure, cholesterol, psych meds, thyroids, sure. Vitamins. Who knows? See, they go to pill line. He's in a medium. So he's probably not taking his pill bottles back to his cell. So he goes to pill line. They give him these little cups with all these pills in it. You've got inmates standing behind him, their shoulder surfing, seeing, wow, Madoff's taking all these pills, and they're asking him what they're for, and he's probably saying, yeah, you know, I'm dying of cancer. So he's trying to blow them off. This kind of stuff happens.
To the extent to which he's taken to a community, whether it's the Navajo Indian sweat lodge crowd or the homosexual crowd, how do you think he's doing?
Well, everyone's reaching out to him. I guess they want to be Bernie's friend. They want to have the notoriety that they're running with Bernie Madoff. To get into the sweat lodge, it's like by invitation only. I've been into the sweat lodge a couple times. And they've got these in all the prisons. It's a religious kind of thing. And they go in there, they take their shirts off, they heat the stones up, they smoke sage, they chant, they play the drum, or they smoke anything else they can get into the institution. So maybe Bernie's exploring all kinds of things.
Let's pause right there. I got it. Now, why would an old Jewish guy want to go in an Indian sweat lodge? He could be smoking salmon in there. I just figured it out. Okay, go on. Let's see the next... He could be smoking a salmon. Let's see the last one.
Let's break it down. You got the black gangs. Bernie's not running with them. You've got the Hispanic gangs. He's not running with them. And the white gangs are going to be the Aryan gangs. Well, they're certainly not going to take a 71-year-old Jew into an Aryan gang.
Okay, let's play the Indian music out of respect for the sweat lodge. And apparently Bernie's going into the sweat lodge where they can smoke things. All right, well, you got to respect all sorts of religions in America as long as it's not Christianity. That's the one religion you can put down, apparently, according to liberalism. Well, that was Wall Street prison consultant Larry Levine, another expert. Wherever you turn, there's another expert now on Bernie Madoff's life in prison and the rumor of pancreatic cancer. 1-800-449-8255. Life is a joke. In fact, I made a decision last night. Woke up in the middle of the night before going back to sleep for hours, and I came to a conclusion, which is that, yes, I'm on a banned list in England, but let them go to hell. Screw them. They don't deserve me. Yeah, I'll fight them. Yes, you'll buy the book or you won't buy the book. One way or the other, I'll get off that list or I won't get off the list. They're not going to besmirch my reputation because my reputation will outlive all of them. The fact of the matter is I've written over 25 books. I've done very good things on the planet. And I'm not going to let a bunch of incompetent, lying, thieving liberals from England undermine it. And so my legacy has already been written. It's not going to be rewritten by these thieving criminals, as I said to myself. But what do I do in the interim? How do I deal with this without letting it get to me? At the same time, continuing to fight them. And I said, you know what? Years ago, you read Henry Miller. You used to read Henry Miller a lot 15 years ago. When you hit the same stone wall in your life and a different kind of stone wall, and you started reading Tropic of Capricorn, Black Spring, Tropic of Cancer, and Henry Miller had a view of life that it was all a cosmic joke. And, it really struck me as true then, and it helped me get through many a bad night. And I've used literature before, and I'm going to use literature again. And that's what I came to. Now back to the regular programming. Chicago, Ginger, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael Savage, you are driving me crazy. You are not helping your cause when you perpetuate the myth of Obama being a professor. He never reached the heights of professor. He had degrees from Harvard, and he got a job as a teacher of undergrads, teaching of some law classes at U of C. When he entered the room, they didn't stand up and say, "Hello, Professor Obama." They said, "Hello, Mr. Community Organizer Obama."
Okay, so he was a college lecturer, not a professor, is what you're. No, I understand the difference. I know the hierarchy. Obviously, it's something important to you as well. I use it for identification purposes, not for specific reasons unto themselves. When I say college professor, I say it with derision, by the way.
No, that isn't how it comes off. It comes off as you are not helping your cause by calling.
Are you yourself a college professor? Is that why you take umbrage with my description of him?
What?
Are you yourself a college professor?
No, I have 2 years of college myself. I never went.
Oh, so that's why you're an expert on whether someone is a college professor. Thanks for the call. Thanks for correcting me. I love somebody with 2 years of college correcting someone with two master's degrees and a PhD. I mean, she didn't even understand the sarcasm, but okay, look, that's life. North Carolina, Bill, go ahead, please.
Yeah. Mike, I had a cousin on that flight. Name was Sandra Rogers.
Yes.
They found only pieces of her.
I can imagine that you're not too happy with the fact that Attorney General Holder apparently was involved in the approval of the release of the Lockerbie bomber to go home to die in peace in Libya. Well, you don't have to look any further than some of the traditional Scottish dishes, do you, to understand the thinking?
That's right. I love haggis.
Let's face it, there's more to Scotland than Scotch whiskey, which I am boycotting.
Been to Scotland 4 times.
What is the national dish? Isn't it haggis, sheep's intestines?
Yes, haggish. Yes.
Yeah, haggish. They eat sheep guts stuffed with what?
With it's in belly of a sheep stuffed with parts of sheep and lamb.
Mm-hmm. Well, that may explain their thinking. It could have been lacking refrigeration for a few months before the justice minister got to it. He understands that the world's upside down is being run by radical liberals, and that's where we are. They're working for the other side, taking the side of Al-Qaeda, pretending that they're protecting us. I, Michael Savage, will be right back.
Savage.
Right now, I'd like to take some calls from you at 1-800-449-8255. That's my phone number. From anywhere in the United States of America and England, 1-800-449-8255. Is that my number? What do you think thus far of Party of One by Khalefa Sena? I got to tell you, I enjoyed the meeting with him. He's a great guy. I didn't know how it would turn out in advance. But if you have any comments thus far, I'd like you to call me at 1-800-449-8255. This is something I think mainly women are going to call about. I think mainly women read The New Yorker. I'm joking. No, it's kind of like a woman thing to like have The New Yorker. But when I was a kid and like there were kids who had a little more money, they had The New Yorker in the house. We didn't have The New Yorker. We had The Daily News, The Mirror. But like if you were really – like you made a little more money, you had The New Yorker. And you heard the parents talking about – like what was in the theater and movies from The New Yorker. But since my family didn't go to theater, I don't either, by the way. I'm not putting them down. I hate the theater. Despise it. Nothing against you if you're an actor. I love acting. I prefer movies. In fact, I have another friend who's a genius, and I had a greasy Chinese lunch with him yesterday. I said, let me ask you something. Do you go to the opera or symphony or the theater? No, he said, I hate it. He said, I like to go home at night and lock the doors like you do and watch movies. I said, to me, theater predates Edison. I mean, it predates the motion picture. Why would I want to sit in the theater with someone passing gas in front of me or, you know, perfume or a cough job, right? I mean, do I want to sit around people coughing and with bad smell? You know, people do smell. And I'm real sensitive. I have a big problem with my sense of smell. I admit it's a disability. But I don't like the scent of other human beings around me. I react to them. That's the point. I have a sixth sense. with scent, and I can hear things others can't hear. I know you think I'm making it up. I'm not. I can hear things. I'm tuned into stuff aisles and aisles away. I don't like listening. I'm distracted. In my bedroom, I can control the environment. It's like a theater. It's like radio. Why do you think I love radio? It's a controlled environment, right? Lock the doors. Turn on the ISDN. It's me and the dog, and I have almost total control unless the system breaks down. So you get what I'm saying or not? Whatever. I think it's a very good article. If you don't like it, we'll move on. We'll talk about Obama. We're going, oh, yeah, I'm not talking about Obama. You know everything you need to know about him and more. He's a front man for the Daily Machine in Chicago. It's the 51st Ward. They could care less about America. They don't care if they bankrupt you or turn you over to the enemy as long as they can stuff their pockets. Is there any more I need to say about it? It makes the most corrupt presidency in American history look like a patriotic group. What would you like to talk about? I'd like to talk about this. Right now, I'm only talking about this. Bob in New York, WOR, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Michael, we have so much in common. Although I'm younger than you are, guess what? It's that Eastern European heritage. It's that dark melancholy that makes me what I am, makes you what
That's
you
right.
Are.
What am I going to hide it and be cheerful and sunny?
You do carry the weight on your shoulder, but that, guess what? That's what we were made for. But you know what?
Here's the whole thing is, why do I have to be cheerful? Where is it written that a man is supposed to go through life smiling like a dunce?
Well, that's why you have Stan Getz and the Oscar Peterson trio. And when you feel
But you
that,
know, you know, no, let's go to some other realities here. Let's talk about men from other cultures. You look at men from Russia before they become Americanized. Do they walk around with a fixed smile on their face?
No. Walk around
look
with
at the men from Mexico. Take a look at their faces, with or without the gangland tattoos. Do they walk around the streets smiling? No, they walk around with a grimness. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, well, that's the nature of human beings. They're grim. The smile is an add-on from a life with father.
And you're exactly
so, right. In other words, you're a lifetime depressive? You're on medication?
Hey, I'm from the same place.
No, level with me. Are you on medication?
No.
Neither am I. See, I raged against it all my life. Just because you are grim and melancholic doesn't mean you're sick. And by the way, just because a person has complexity doesn't mean that they're conflicted. This is something you have to understand. If you read this profile of me, which I hope many of you will do by buying the magazine, you're going to see things that apparently are conflicted, but they're not conflicted. What they are is complex. And you have to understand that you can be complex without being in conflict. See, in our society today, men are being driven, men and women, of course, are being driven into becoming either one thing or another. Are you a liberal or are you a conservative? Are you white? Are you black? Are you Hispanic or are you Asian? Are you for or are you against? Well, that's not what human beings are. Human beings are a blend of things. Human beings are complex. And only in recent times do we see a desire to hammer us all into one thing or the other. You get it?
I get it.
Sorry, I'm sure you do. So what I'm saying is I'm from another time. I got to admit it. I am not this. I am not that. I'm this and that. I am neither here. I am neither there. I'm here and there. In other words, you can make of me what you want. And so you can say, well, therefore, what are you? I'll say, I'll let you decide. Because you can demonize me, as many people do in the media, because what they do is they take words I say out of context and turn them into the whole me. That's not who I am. That's what they did to me in England. They took words that I said, twisted them, took them out of context, and they made me into the equivalent of a murderer who actually killed people. Is that who I am? Have I ever killed anybody? No. You understand what I'm saying to you? So this fellow who did the profile of me in The New Yorker, I think understands what I just said better than anybody who's ever interviewed me. In fact, right now, if I have a minute or two, I'm going to read a few more pieces from the profile of Michael Savage from The New Yorker. Savage abhors animal cruelty, though not as much as he abhors the animal rights movement. And as many listeners know, his interest in the natural world predates his identity as a firebrand. He is a scientist by training, and before he became a talk show host, he was the author of more than a dozen books on alternative medicine. Somehow the years of research made him not a chipper health nut, but a melancholy fatalist, all too aware that every day brings with it a new dose of poison for his beleaguered body. Quote, theoretically, when I get off the air, I should go run, I should walk, I should bicycle, I should do a treadmill, he told his listeners, while lamenting that he never followed his own advice. He offered a synopsis of the night before, quote, "The worst thing you could do is go to dinner. I went to dinner. The second worst thing you could do is have two drinks. I had two beers. The third worst thing you could do is come right home and watch television. I came right home and watched television. I didn't sleep a minute last night. One nightmare after another." He sighed. "I'll do the same thing again tonight." So he gets the humor, okay? He gets the gestalt of Michael Savage. But I want to go back to some other parts of it that really are funny. Earlier this year, Savage found himself at the center of a strange international incident after the British government announced, seemingly out of the blue, that he was on a list of 22 hate promoters who had recently been banned from entering the country. On his show that day, he played God Save the Queen by the Sex Pistols and said, "The punks had it right. There is no future in England." This punk rock interlude would not have surprised Savage's regular listeners, who know him to be, more days than not, a marvelous storyteller, a quirky thinker, and an incorrigible free associator. He sometimes sounds less like a political commentator than like the star of a riveting and unusually vivid one-man play. He frequently dumps callers, even even sympathetic ones, after about a sentence and a half, or a fugitive character out of a Philip Roth novel. Savage seems resigned to the fact that the majority of Americans, including many of his own listeners, just don't get it, just don't get him, and never will. He is a permanent resident of the political wilderness, sending daily dispatches back to the diseased civilization that the rest of us call home. Come on. I haven't read writing as good as this in years. I mean, some of it's not complimentary that's coming up, believe me. And some of it's wrong. There's some errors in here. But the writing is superb. Kay, you did a good job thus far. Let me continue here. I got a minute. When President Obama went to Britain for the G20 summit, Savage devoted a good portion of his show to the dinner menu. He scoffed at the vegetarian options. And then he wondered aloud whether a Bakewell tart was, quote, a lady from one of the side streets. Probably Jackie Smith. And expounded upon his hatred for Irish soda bread, saying, "I don't know what the big deal is. It's full of butter and cream. Yuck, very high rate of heart attack in Ireland." All this talk about food made him think about dinner. So he read the menu from a local seafood restaurant. He took exception to the tilapia. That's like pond grown. That's the worst. And to the oyster shooter, quote, "It sounds like a dirty thing to order." He then turned his attention to the frog's legs. He wondered, how could you not feel bad for the frog when you eat that? He compared eating frog's legs to eating chicken, and soon he was immersed in a philosophical soliloquy about his beloved gray poodle, Teddy. "My dog is only 11 pounds. What's shocking to me is that my dog's hind quarter, I looked at it the other day when he got wet. I looked at his leg. It looked like a large chicken leg. I got frightened. So I said, how could you eat a chicken and savor it? And the dog's, I can't do it. And I say, then your mind starts running. If you have a kaleidoscopic mind like I do, like what if you were starving, would you eat Teddy? Don't even think about it. I mean, you think about these things. Would you eat him? How would you eat him? Stop it."
Savage.
Having to have not. I know that that's not the exact German translation. Sounds like the having to have not. Whatever. It is the Savage Nation. You're listening to the music of Rammstein, which is good. Nine. My lucky number, nine. All right, turn it off. I'm reading you some of the headlines. SAT scores dip for high school class of 09. I'm shocked, just shocked, that the SAT scores have dipped. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. You want to talk about any of the topics I brought up? You want to talk about a topic you want to bring up? I'm going to start giving out from now until the end of the hour free copies of Banned in Britain to anyone who gets on the program. Go ahead. Any caller is fine.
Savage, hey, I'm a longtime listener, and I'm a new business owner and a new father in San Francisco and a new resident at that.
Wow.
I moved here only for education. I'm in a very specialized field, industrial design. There's not a lot of great schools. But the story that actually I was going to call about, I know you love the Boys in Blue, and I totally support strong communities. So I don't know whether this is because they had their hands tied behind their back or what. I'll let you discern that. The story is I live in the Tenderloin because it's cheap.
Yep.
And, right. You know, the people who live here, they aren't bad people. It's mostly the people outside the houses who really destroy these kind of neighborhoods. Everyone who's paying their rent is a good person for the most
part. You mean the bums in the street who are allowed to run wild in the streets because of the mayor and the supervisors, don't you?
The bums, the junkies, everything. You know who, exactly the prostitutes, you know the characters I'm talking about.
Yeah, but the police are told not to touch them. Kamala Harris, the DA, who is the most incompetent DA in San Francisco history, who hates the police, talking about her success in controlling gang activity in the city. Do you believe that Kamala Harris has controlled gang activity?
From my neighborhood, no, absolutely not.
I'm going to send you a free copy, by the way, of Banned in Britain when it comes out. I want to make sure that you get a free copy so that you can walk around with it in the streets of San Francisco. Now, let's move on. So I'm telling you what happened. And the article comes out in the New Yorker. I'm expecting the worst because I'm defensive about the media, and I had no idea which way it was going to go. And the reason I agreed to the interview is because I knew he was going to do it anyway. And I figured, you know, I know one thing about myself, which is that no matter what people think of me from a distance, when they meet me and spend time with me, they come away with a different view because I'm not what they heard about. I'm a different person. They have no idea the depth of my background, my learning, etc., nor the humanity that they feel. So anyway, I say, I'll take a chance. Guy comes out, blah, blah, blah. I liked him. I didn't know whether it was going to be good or bad. I had no idea. My instincts were take a chance on the guy because he was, listen to why. He was a jazz writer for the New York, the reporter, the writer rather, the journalist, whatever you want to call him. He was a jazz writer for the New York Times for 7 years. Now, anyone who writes on jazz is a man who listens to the music. So anyone who has an ear to listen to jazz is capable of understanding subtlety, capable of understanding chord changes, variations. So I figure, okay, if he's listening this carefully to my show, his appearance, as his emails seem to reflect, then he must really he be hearing me. And I was right. Don't you understand? I took a chance, gambled on a human being, and I was right. It wasn't a hit piece. But the way it left me was like I fell off Mount Olympus. Or it's more like the myth of Sisyphus in reverse. I got to the top. Instead of having pushed the rock up again, I fell down the other side.
Savage.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day. Take a guy like Red Skelton. You may remember him. You may not. Played a clown. Did a good job. I loved him as a kid. Didn't know much about him. As it turned out, the man painted. He painted schlocky paintings of clowns. What did he paint? 1,000 clown pictures? What was he trying to do? I thought about it the other day as a grown man. What do you think he was doing? He was trying to paint the clowns out of his own head. You see what I'm saying? In other words, there was a higher part of Red Skelton. In order for him to perform at all, there had to be a brilliant, high element within him, something spiritually higher, right, to be a performer like that. Because he didn't use dirty words. He didn't do anything with filthy, dirty language in order to get a laugh out of an audience. He actually used comedy to attract people, unlike the dirtbags on Showtime and HBO today. Every other word is F. Or MF, or F and MF, 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 F, 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 MF, MF, what'd you say? MF, 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 what'd you say? MF, MF, what'd you say? F, that's HBO's idea of comedy. Every other word, MF, 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 and that's not comedy, it's insanity. But Red Skelton didn't have to do that, so there was a higher element with him. But the clown he had to use inside himself to hit those notes. But he was depressed that he had to be a clown to get the audience to listen. He probably would rather have been the higher element within himself. Does this make sense to you? See, painted clowns all his life, I think, to rid his mind of the clowns. You'd call them, what do they call them today? Everything they have a psychological word for, and they give you a drug to turn you into a Democrat. What would you call it today? Not the ghosts. In my day, they called it the shadow. Huh? No, not psychological terms. They say inner demons. Now, everything's an inner demon. In other words, everything that's a human being, oh, he's got inner demon, take a pill, come back in 3 months, take another one. We'll see if that doesn't put down the psychosis. We'll give you another one. It'll create the psychosis. What inner demon? It's inner selves. I recognized at age 18 through self-analysis for 5 straight years that if you peel away the onion and keep peeling away the onion of your own self, at the middle of it, you're going to find nothing. At the center of it all, there's nothing. So why peel anymore? So you pack the onion back up and you march forward and that's it. What are you looking for inside? There's nothing there. Hello? Keep knocking. Keep a knocking, but you can't come in. Do you have that song for me right now? Keep, because I know I'm going to get slammed now already with it. No, my God is within. Keep looking within and you'll find God within the center of yourself. All right. Yeah, I know. Jimmy Carter thought he met him in his living room because of the strychnine. I mean, that family drank enough strychnine for the guy to become the peacenik he is. You talk about the average person has nothing on the inside. The Jimmy Carter family with the strychnine and the snakes and seeing his lord and master in a living room. I don't know what he was wearing. I don't know, trousers, tweeds,
went away and left me
a tuxedo.
Time ago.
Who's this?
Now you
keep a knocking, but you can't.
Knock. I hear you knocking, but you can't come in.
With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
I hear you knocking.
This is the Savage Nation.
I begged you not to go, but you said goodbye. Now you come back telling all those lies. I hear you knocking, but you can't come in. I hear you knocking. Go back where you've been. A long time ago, the day would come when you miss me so. I hear you knocking, but you can't come in. I hear you knocking.
Savage.